Howdy neighbors, Ron Hayes with you today with another Ag Perspectives podcast. Today we've got Lance Zimmerman from Rabobank joining us. Lance talking with us about a recent Rabobank report on global beef production and an outlook. We'll get into not only talking about that global perspective, but also here in the U.S., how we're doing as far as production is concerned, heifer retention, consumer attitudes, and more here in just a moment. Invenergy is investing in Oklahoma. Having completed its first Oklahoma project in 2006, Invenergy has continued supporting our rural communities by volunteering, donating to local organizations, and sponsoring local events. In addition to the $400 million Invenergy invests annually in project communities, Invenergy developed and operated energy facilities, provide jobs, tax revenues, landowner payments, and other sources of local economic development. Invenergy is committed to Oklahoma. Lance Zimmerman with us today. Lance with Rabobank. And in recent days, Lance, you and your team, Rabobank put out a second quarterly beef outlook and into the second half of the year, in fact, of where we are for 2024. Give me some of the highlights, what you learned and you put out in this particular study.
Yeah, I'll kind of start out from a global perspective, and then we can whittle our way down to what's happening in the U.S. and current day. You know, as you look at the global marketplace, we're really seeing a two-tier market that's developing in terms of what global cattle prices are doing. And that trend in global cattle prices aligns very closely with exactly what's happening country by country from a production standpoint. You have two markets that are clearly showing strength above all the others, the U.S. and Canadian cattle markets. They're at record or near record highs for a lot of the different classes of cattle prices in each of those two respective countries. While you have countries, Australia, New Zealand, Argentina, Brazil, their prices are trending softer since 2022. And again, the big difference in a lot of those price trends, the easy parallel to draw on, is the fact that production is looking different in those countries. As we talk about Australia, Brazil, New Zealand, they're in an increasing production environment right now. And those production numbers are weighing on those domestic market values because those same countries are very dependent on trade. They export a much higher percentage of their domestic production than we do in a country like the U.S., where our domestic production is starting to decline. We noticed it last year. We're not seeing it as well this year with year-over-year declines for a variety of factors. But we're not sitting here walking into more production each and every day like those other countries. Yes, our trade situation's not as strong this year compared to past years. We're seeing that in the data through April. But we also are in a situation where about 90% of our production stays right here, where we only are sending about 10% overseas. Contrast that with a country like Australia, where about 70% of their production is being exported into markets that are softer. Whether you look at South Korea, Japan, or China, those are three major markets for the U.S. They're all down over the last 12 months, and it's been difficult for a lot of those other countries to displace some of that decline in exports from the U.S. and take over market share in those countries because demand in those countries is also softer. So that's the biggest thing we're seeing from a global perspective and highlight quite well in the report.
Know that as you look at the global picture, you did also look pretty closely at, rather Japan, which of course is a huge market for several of the key exporters, including the United States.
Yeah, exactly. And as I mentioned, those overseas markets in Asia, they're struggling with some demand right now. As you look at Japan, their consumption numbers remain weak. They're hoping for a boost in demand from business travel and obviously holiday travel so that they can get some recovery there. But overall, they're a country that we're struggling with getting a bump in volume, a bump in consumption in those areas. And then you look at countries like Japan and China, they have an adequate number of stocks in inventory. We saw big increases in China in the first quarter in beef imports. Some of that is some year-over-year base effect. If we think back to last year to start the year, they weren't bringing in as many imports from Brazil. They shut down and halted exports from Brazil into China from a number of Brazilian plants as they were struggling with their animal disease issues there. But overall, each of those countries have quite a bit of stocks on hand, and that's kind of been a dark cloud over the potential for some of those markets.
When we zero in on the United States, what's really sticking out in your mind as we you know, we're hitting right at the end of the second quarter? We've got the second half of the year now staring us in the face.
Yeah, I think there's been two big surprises if we're to sit back and look at how the start of 2024 has been. The first big surprise is very similar to the surprise we talked about in a lot of 2023, and it's that demand continues to hold up exceptionally well. We've now had April and May retail prices just short of $8 a pound. New record highs. What's surprising about that, though, is not just the higher prices. I think we all expected that as we looked at this year, but we expected it because we all were operating under the assumption that supplies were going to be smaller. Well, we are getting certain aspects of supply smaller, slaughter the main one. Year to date, steer and heifer slaughter is down about a percentage point, not down as soft as we would have thought, but nonetheless, the direction, the arrow's pointing in line with expectation. Beef cow slaughter is down 17% year to date in the weekly data, and total cow and bull slaughter, if we look at dairy cattle and bulls thrown in there, is down similarly, 15 to 16% year to date. But we've offset some of those slaughter declines with increases in weight. You know, you're looking at steer carcass weights right now, should be at their seasonal lows, and perhaps they are for the second quarter, but they're well above the lows we put in late January and early February after some of those winter storms, well above those levels and about 20 pounds plus above where we were a year ago. We're offsetting a lot of slaughter decline with increased carcass weights. We're also offsetting a lot of slaughter decline with stronger imports. You look at imports year to date, they're up double digit percentages. As we look at net beef imports, we're talking about the difference in trade, exports versus imports. Net beef imports are up over 150% year to date. That offsets a lot of supply decline in that domestic slaughter component. And as a result, April per capita supplies and May as well are going to be actually above year ago, and year to date numbers will be nearly identical to a year ago. So when you look at these record high beef prices in light of the fact that we have plenty of consumption available for beef due to those supply metrics, it's been a phenomenal year. And as we look forward, we're seeing strong fed cattle markets during a time of year where typically those markets come under pressure. And I still think as we get into July and get past the 4th of July holiday, cattle prices will soften a little bit. But I think the expectation of a more steady to softer market over the next 4 to 5 weeks is very realistic, that we'll find an awful lot of support in that mid-180s area, maybe even just a little bit below that. And then we'll start grinding this market higher into the end of the year from a fed cattle perspective.
So at what point does the shoe drop and we really start seeing some serious contraction on overall supplies and numbers?
That is the million-dollar question, Ron. I think as we look at weights right now, the reason weights are trending higher is because the spread between the fed cattle market and current cost of gains in feed yards is incredibly wide. The feed yard has every incentive in the world to try and keep feeding the cattle they have longer. The opportunity to bring new placements into the feed yard and bring them in at a profit, a guaranteed profit based on where the futures market is today, is a tough sell. Cattle feeders have to be willing to bet on the come, as we like to say in the industry, as they're bringing in placements here this summer, looking to market them later this winter. And so the idea is, let's keep feeding the one we have into a profit rather than bring in one that we got to gamble on a little bit right now. And so as long as weights stay strong, that's going to keep these supplies elevated. Then you have to look at the slaughter side of it. So essentially, when can we get slaughter to decline enough to offset the weight increases that we're seeing? I think we're still in a situation where as we look at the cattle that are on feed today, there's an awful lot of heifers in them. We saw that with the April 1 cattle on feed report. The volume of heifers on feed was very similar to the past few years. The percentage of that mix was still very elevated historically. And we know we have more beef on dairy cattle in that mix that are keeping that heifer number perhaps more elevated than prior history. But the bottom line is the cattle that are on feed today represent a population that was created with a cow-calf guy that was still letting go of heifers rather than retaining them. Now, that said, Ron, we are seeing the first big runs of video auction market cattle for the summer. We're starting to see some volume of heifers among those feeder cattle and calf sales on video that are actually a little bit down from a year ago by a couple percentage points. Suggests to me that as we look forward, using these video auction markets as a projection to the fall run, that maybe we will start to see a little more heifer retention than we've been accustomed to over the last 5 years. Maybe not enough to lean into a very robust, very strong rebuild, but enough to get us to where maybe as we talk about 2026, January 1, 2026 cow numbers, we can talk about a herd that's steady to higher, where I think we're going to talk about a January 1, 2025 cow herd printed number from the USDA that's probably going to be steady to a little bit softer still.
So we're not quite there, but we are at least sniffing around some heifer retention.
Yep. And as we pull those heifers out, the first leg is you got to get cow slaughter to stop. And we're seeing that, right? When we're seeing 17% year-over-year declines in beef cow slaughter, we've definitely hit the brakes on liquidation. The second shoe to drop is really to get those heifers retained in this fall run or start to get into that trend. And then that'll lead to that next leg of tighter supplies. We'll tighten up the on-feed supply, we'll tighten up fed slaughter, and we'll get that next pop higher to the markets, very similar to what we would have seen in 2014 and 15. Maybe not quite as robust, but certainly another element of support to these markets as we look at the kind of second stage of this later part of the cattle cycle.
Go back to one of the things you said early on about the surprises of 2024, demand. Are we going to be able to maintain consumers on being on board regarding paying these higher prices for available supplies?
When we look at the consumer, I always like to remind cattle producers that demand has two elements to it. One is what the consumer's current economic situation is and their willingness to pay and what their expectation is for the future. And what we've seen play out over the last 18 months, even as we've seen heightened geopolitical risk, we've seen sky-high inflation, we've seen challenges with interest rates, is when you look at the consumer sentiment data, almost all of it over the last 18 months of surveys showed that the consumer said, our situation is okay today. It's not great. It's not dire. It's just okay. But our expectations for the future are concerning. And that's been the dark cloud again that's kind of loomed over this demand discussion. The consumer was kind of keeping their personal finances in order. They were certainly stressed, but they weren't screaming for help. Their concern was that over the next 6 to 12 months, they would be screaming for help. Well, that's never really played out. And so what we're seeing from a demand perspective is the reward of that. That the consumer is realizing that, gosh, you know, I'm getting stressed right now financially, and I don't like the situation I'm in. It could certainly be better, but I'm not sitting here feeling like I'm sinking and there's nobody here to help me. I can kind of tread water, and I think that's why beef demand has been so good. The consumers told us time and time again, as long as their income situation doesn't change, even if beef prices are going up, they're going to keep buying beef. And I think that's literally the situation we're in today. And we're being helped by a retailer who, even though wholesale pork and poultry costs have come down considerably, they've not adjusted their retail prices for a lot of those items significantly lower. And so consumer incomes are holding quite strong. and that competitive price difference between pork and poultry isn't getting dramatically wider. It's still very strong. The premium for beef in the retail meat case is still very strong, but the consumer's saying it's worth it because of all the gains that we've made over the last two decades in more prime and more choice product. And quite frankly, we've armed the consumer with a lot of cool tools to prepare beef at home between Blackstone grills and pellet smokers and Instapots and all these things. When the consumer's sitting here looking at restaurant prices that keep ratcheting higher as restaurants can't hide higher labor costs in their menu items to near the extent that retail can in the meat case, the consumer's saying, hey, I'm gonna just transition those beef purchases at restaurants and I'm gonna buy them more at retail. And we're getting a lot of competition at retail this summer during grilling season to maintain foot traffic of those consumers and put beef in feature ads. And that's good news for the beef producer today.
Wrap up, Lance. What are your thoughts? In other words, any big takeaways in your mind regarding the second half of 2024, and maybe a first way too early look at where we'll be 2025?
No, I think as we look at exactly what's playing out this year, it's been a great year if you're a cattle producer. We know that cyclically, we go through a period where eventually the U.S. consumer hands more of their dollars all the way back to the cow-calf producer. Those dollars have to transition from the packer to the feed yard to the stocker background or ultimately to the cow-calf guy. We've finally seen that last transition as we went through the winter that we just went through. Costs are still pretty high for a lot of producers, but they're getting more reasonable. Grain stocks are ample. We're in a period of time here where I think cow-calf producers can have some confidence that good margins are ahead of them. We still need Mother Nature to help us out. We don't have an abundance of pond water and stream water across a lot of major cow-calf country, but pastures have been green so far. If Mother Nature can help us out, there's going to be a real opportunity to rebuild the cow herd over the next several years. As we look at it from a total demand standpoint, the consumer still loves the product we're serving them. We have to be a little bit concerned about recession risk, but I think a lot of that risk is passing as time proves itself out. And so as I look at it, prices are going to keep inching higher. And I think as we get to the fourth quarter of this year, we're going to see another very strong cattle market for us, somewhat contra-seasonally stronger as we look at it from a fed cattle perspective. But I think feeder cattle and calf prices during that fall run will stay very well supported as well. And then we'll look ahead and hope that in 2025, we start to see some heifer retention really provide the next leg of support for this market. So very optimistic as we look forward to the next year and a half.
Thank you, Lance. Lance Zimmerman with Rabobank talking about this cattle market and report that Rabobank has got out right now, and some great insights on beef producers, the production, heifer retention, the consumer, and some way outside the immediate time frame outlook into 2025 and 2026. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.